Welcome back, everybody. Stand by me. Thank you, Jason. That's a great song choice for our next guest. We have got, besides me having a terrible cold, James Duke Mason on the line with us, who's been heading up the recent boycott of the Beverly Hills Hotel regarding the Sultan of Brunei's call for the stoning of homosexuals and adulterers under Sharia law. Duke, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry you've got the same thing I've got.
I know. It's a bummer, but I'm happy I could at least join you over the phone.
I'm glad you were able to join us anyway. Thank you very much. Karen Oakham is in studio here with us also, Duke.
Hi, Duke.
Hi, Karen.
All right, Duke, what is going on? What's the deal?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting journey because, you know, a lot of people have said, well, you know, this whole thing blew up about 4 or 5 years ago, and why is it coming back again? What has changed? So, you know, I guess after the first uproar, the Sultan decided to delay the implementation of Sharia law, but now, you know, as of yesterday, I guess they're finally implementing the law. And so, you know, I feel like if there's one silver lining out of this, it's that I think, given all the publicity and all the attention that this is getting with George Clooney's op-ed, hopefully, you know, because of all the attention, we're actually going to be able to make a real difference finally on this. And I think, you know, even more so than 4 or 5 years ago, there's a lot of publicity and a lot of attention that, you know, even more so than 4 or 5 years ago. So if there's one silver lining, it's that people are finally aware of this, and that's the most important thing.
You know, under this law, both Donald Trump and John Duran could both be stoned, one for being an adulterer, one for being a homosexual, right?
No, I mean, it's a tragedy, and it's horrifying, and, you know, but I really do think, you know, people say the boycott isn't working. I know for a fact that the hotel, the Beverly Hills Hotel, but also the entire Dorchester Collection, that they are feeling the impact of this. I know for a fact that a lot of major events have already been canceled. The hotels are losing money. And I know that the Sultan is aware of that. So, you know, the idea that, oh, you know, it's not having an impact, it definitely is having an impact. And I actually really do think that, you know, hopefully we can change the law. But either way, I've heard that the Sultan is, you know, there's a real chance he may divest himself of the hotels, I think, if we keep up the pressure.
Well, and part of the point is that not only is it Sharia law, but and in that part of the world, but there's a lot of unemployment. He's very, very rich, but there's a lot of unemployment in that very small little country, especially among the young. And there's poverty, and it's an oil-rich country, but he's the one that gets the oil riches, not his people. So by enforcing this Sharia law that's not only against anybody, here's the thing that we need to understand. Enforcement of the Sharia law against anybody who is perceived to be gay or LGBT, not just actually caught in the act of having gay sex, so-called gay sex, but also adultery and also amputation for theft. But what this does is that it enables the law enforcement, it enables police to put wiretaps on phones, to go onto the internet and follow somebody on Facebook or Grindr or whatever and suss out these people and invade homes. They don't have, you know, you need a subpoena to come into the, you know, knock on the door and say, hi, we're here. We want to, you know, here's this subpoena. They can break in if they suspect somebody is LGBT. And then it's not just death by stoning or whipping. They also demand having a crowd, a Muslim crowd. So, of course, a lot of people in the Muslim community are going, wait a second, you know, our religion doesn't say this, but under Sharia law, it does. So, you know, that's a pretty important aspect as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not just the LGBT community that's affected by this. As you pointed out, I mean, children even are covered under this. The amputation of limbs, you know, for theft. You know, I mean, it's yes, of course. You know, the LGBT component is important, but you know, this affects women. This affects, you know, children, all sorts of different groups, and I think that, you know, that's something that's important to highlight as well.
Duke, I think you're doing a great job heading up this effort.
Thank you. You know, we're in the process of figuring out the next steps. You know, I'm talking to Cleve Jones, who, you know, was very active in the early days of the boycott. And, you know, we're talking about ways that we're thinking about ways that we can expand and keep this going. And, you know, we're talking about demonstrations and all sorts of different ideas. But, you know, we're definitely going to keep this up, I think, given Clooney and, you know, Ellen coming out and being very vocal about it and Elton. I think even more so than 4 or 5 years ago, there's a real outcry. And I think, we really think that if we keep it up, there's a real chance that we might be able to have an impact. So it's just a question of keeping up the momentum.
You know, I've known you since you were a child, when you were the son of Belinda Mason from the Go-Go's. And she told me she had a gay son, and that's when I first heard about you. And to see you go from that all the way up to what you're doing now and how you're leading this is so impressive. Congratulations, Duke.
Thank you, John. It means a lot coming from you. I really appreciate it.
What about Oprah? Oprah's based in West Hollywood. Let's get Oprah.
She is.
Oprah Winfrey Networks, based at The Lot at Santa Monica Boulevard in La Brea.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, I just taught Karen Oakham. I just taught the Wikipedia something. I just taught the Wikipedia of LGBT something.
Well, story I'm going to have to pursue. You know, while John's coughing, let me ask you one other thing.
Absolutely.
So much of the focus has been on the well-known Beverly Hills Hotel, and because of the Polo Lounge, no doubt. But there's also the Bel Air Hotel. There are two hotels in Beverly Hills and in the greater Los Angeles area. We're not hearing so much about the Bel Air Hotel. And also, for those of us who travel outside of Los Angeles, I think the Dorchester, there are like 7 Dorchester hotels, 2 in France and one in England, if I'm not mistaken. And I know Deutsche Bank has canceled a fundraiser they had at a hotel in Europe. So what can you tell us about the Bel Air?
Deutsche Bank.
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I think that what another good thing about this recent wave of publicity is, you know, as opposed to 4 or 5 years ago when the emphasis, for whatever reason, maybe because it was the flashiest, you know, hotel of them all. You know, before it was sort of a focus on the Beverly Hills Hotel. I think now, thankfully, we're seeing more of an international response, you know. And so, you know, whether it's the Dorchester Hotel in London or, you know, their properties in Italy and in France, I think people are more aware of the fact that, you know, it's not just the one hotel. I don't know why the emphasis was on the Beverly Hills Hotel. I guess, you know, it was the most prominent or, you know, example. But
it's on Sunset Boulevard and the Polo Lounge. Everybody, all the stars go there. And
exactly.
Bel Air is kind of hidden.
But absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, one example of how we know that we're having a real impact is that the hotel actually deactivated all of their social media pages for all of their hotels because of the response they were getting. So, you know, clearly this isn't just, you know, the pressure they're getting isn't just unique to the Beverly Hills Hotel. They're obviously feeling the heat for all of their properties.
Duke, stick around. We got a few more questions. We got to take a quick commercial break here on Sidebar with John Duran on Channel Q. Here at Sidebar with John Duran with Karen Oakham, walking LGBT Wikipedia.
Who
just learned something to add to her Wikipedia. And a very sick John Duran and a very sick Duke Mason on the phone. Duke, you still there with us?
I'm here.
Man, we all got this flu. Karen had a question for you.
I do, Duke. This is, you know, more of a political kind of a question. Well, it's all politics, of course. But it seems to me that, you know, the Republicans keep talking about and worried about Sharia law being imposed in America in some way, shape, or form. So they're sort of predisposed to having problems with Sharia law. Have there been any Republicans who have, you know, raised their hand and said, you know, hey, I'm with you, I'm with you? Or is this, you know, just progressive Democrats who care?
Actually, it's funny you say that, because soon after the news came out that the Sultan was planning to finally implement Sharia law, Ted Cruz actually tweeted and said, you know, this is barbaric, you know, we should, America should stand united against this. So, no, absolutely. I mean, I actually thought that myself. I thought, you know, Donald Trump is always talking about, oh, you know, these other, you know, these countries that, you know, that, you know, the Clinton Foundation accepted money from countries that, you know, torture or murder gay people. But interestingly, there's been no response from the administration or the State Department, as far as I know, on
Actually, I think
surprising.
That they did. Michael Lavers from the Washington Blade has a story up now that there's a statement from the State Department saying they're very concerned about this. That's it. You know, very concerned. What the hell does that mean?
Exactly. Very concerned could mean they're opposed to Sharia law, except in this area. Yeah. Maybe that's what that means.
Even though Trump promised during the Republican convention that specifically he would protect gay people against this.
Yeah, very, very true. Duke,
absolutely.
You just came through a city council race in West Hollywood. I know you didn't make it, even though I was cheering for you, but congratulations. How was that experience for you?
Truthfully, it was a great experience, and you know, I on it. Look, you know, you go into it knowing that, you know, there are two possible outcomes, and you know, I was fully prepared for either way, and you know, I had a great time, and you know, West Hollywood, you know, I wouldn't live anywhere else, and I wouldn't want to run for office anywhere else. This is such a, you know, beautiful, special community, and you know, it's a crazy community, but. But in the best possible way, and it was a real adventure. I had a great time. I really did.
Well, I'm glad you ran.
Are you going to stick with politics, or what are your plans?
Absolutely. You know, I'm still on the Lesbian and Gay Advisory Board with the city, and I'm sure I'll run for office again. I don't know when or, you know, when, but I'm sure down the line, whether it's, you know, 4 years, yeah, who knows? I'm sure but you know, also being on the Lesbian and Gay Advisory Board is a great platform, and there's some really smart people there, and it's a great opportunity to serve. So,
you know, Duke, since you're on that board, let me ask you a question. So, you know, I think that a lot of people in West Hollywood always have this criticism about West Hollywood becoming less gay. But we know demographically that still 40% of West Hollywood remains LGBT. It's always been LGBT. It's that way today. And instead of becoming less gay, we're becoming more gray is what's happening in West Hollywood. And a lot of our LGBT residents are sheltering in and living alone and, you know, finding themselves in what somebody called the other night menopause, another form of menopause, you know, aging in place and not feeling like the pretty hunky guy walking down Santa Monica Boulevard anymore and really feeling ostracized and isolated. Has the LGAP started to think about, you know, those residents, those gay men and lesbians and trans people who are aging in their West Hollywood apartments?
Under rent control.
Under rent control. Like Karen and I. I mean, Karen and I are classic examples
you,
of West
you.
Hollywood residents aging in place.
Thank you.
But absolutely. I mean, that's we actually got a presentation not too long ago on the new housing that's, you know, going to be opened this Sunday at the LGBT Center, you know, just outside of West Hollywood. I mean, I mean, what I love about it is that it's intergenerational. So, you know, you have housing for LGBT youth, for, you know, for homeless youth. You have housing for LGBT seniors. I really think that, you know, what we need more, we need to talk more about whether it's housing or social services. I mean, that's something we definitely, you know, that's on the forefront of our agenda. I mean, so, but you know, we had a great presentation from the Senate, and I really hope that, you know, this could be the first of many similar projects, because they're really doing incredible work, you know, in terms of looking out for our LGBT senior population.
Do you mind if I interject a little plug here? I did a really good interview with Lori Jean, who is the CEO of the LA LGBT Center. It's on the losangelesblade.com right now. And, you know, we have to actually think about this in context. We started out with the Black Cat before Stonewall. Then we had Stonewall, and we're now looking at the 50th anniversary of Stonewall is coming up this June. And what do? We have a $140 million complex that takes 2 acres, a whole full city block, where we're going to have a ribbon cutting. Not we, the center, is going to have a ribbon cutting this Sunday. And you have to think, 50 years after Stonewall, we have this incredible complex that LGBT people raised the money themselves to create in order to continue to protect and support ourselves. You're talking about the intergenerational. You know, it's really critical, and it's so, even in this Trump era, we have this outstanding, this is as monumental and historic in a positive way, the arc from Stonewall and the Black Cat. It's just amazing.
Hey, Duke,
really,
can I impose on you? Can you stick around for one more commercial break? Because I've got two millennials. I just realized we've got two baby boomers here in studio, and I've got two millennials. I've got Jason, my producer, and you, a millennial, on the phone. And I think I'd like to have a little, you know, cross-generational chat about binary and non-binary sexuality and fluidity, because it's producing a bit of friction. So can you stick around for one more commercial break?
Of course.
All right. Absolutely. You're listening to Sidebar with John Duran here on Channel Q. Welcome back, everybody, here in studio with Karen Oakham, who's helping me co-host today. I've got a terrible cold. Just want to remind you all to head to the WeAreChannelQRadio.com. Try to win your chance to win a free flyaway trip for two to New York City Pride or into the Channel Q Coachella House. You can do that online by going to WeAreChannelQ.com to get your chance to win access to one of these great contests and great prizes. Don't forget to do that. We are on the line with Duke Mason. And Duke, you have been so nice because I know you're suffering from the flu too, but thank you for staying on for one more session.
Of course.
I wanted, you know, it's very rare to have two baby boomers and two millennials in the same place. I thought, oh my God, this is like wonderful. Because Karen and I came out during the sexual liberation movement when the LGBT movement was started. And you and Jason Yazin, who's my straight producer here, but a millennial,
that
you
I
know,
am.
Is you guys have had a completely different experience. And just wanted to chat about the whole binary, non-binary. I was telling Karen during the break, when a lot of us came out, at least gay men, during the 70s, we had to stake a position on the hill that we were gay, that we were queer, that we were sex positive. We weren't going to back down. This is who we are. This is how we look in leather. This is how we look in drag and lace. This is how we have our sexuality, and we expressed it very openly and aggressively.
And politically.
And politically, because we had to, because we were considered deviant, and we had to put it out there in full color in order to stop the lies about us. And today, it seems like most LGBT people who are coming out are very comfortably assimilated into their peer groups. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about all that, Duke.
Well, absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody last night, in fact, about the fact that, you know, I feel like I'm the very last generation where, you know, I remember what it was like to live in an era before, you know, gay culture was fully assimilated. I mean, of course, you know, it's been the last 15 years or so, really since Will and Grace, but even in the last 5 years, the amount of change that's taken place, you know, gays who were even a few years younger than me, you know, grew up in a very different environment where, you know, when Glee started including gay characters, I thought that was a big deal. But people even, you know, who are 21, 23 now, you know, they really grew up, you know, in the last, you know, let's say 5-7 years, where we're living in a completely different time in terms of, you know, the fact that gay culture is completely assimilated in terms of music, in terms of fashion, pop culture. There really has been a massive sea change, and I think that includes, you know, gender and gender identity. I really think, you know, I remember what it was like, obviously, to live in an era without marriage equality, but people who were even just a little bit younger than me grew up in a very different environment. So it's just interesting how, you know, even millennials compared to Generation Y, which I believe is the, you know, people who are even younger than millennials, there's like a, you know, each generation has a very different, unique experience.
And Jason, you're just a little bit younger. You're 20.
I'm 26.
26, yeah. And you're straight, and you're so comfortable around LGBT
people. And a producer.
People. And the producer of my show. And you're so, I've never seen you bat an eye about any, because I've had lots of guests in here that would usually raise an eyebrow. But you just don't bat an eye about anything. And why?
Well, I just think that, I mean, when it comes to a person's beliefs, I don't feel like somebody should be imposing somebody's own beliefs onto another. I feel like that everybody's entitled to be themselves and be who they want to be. And I feel like nowadays we have more of an awareness, I guess, to the LGBTQ community, in the sense that, you know, the media is like Glee, as you said, was being heavily showcased on television. It was widely popular. And I just think that nowadays, you know, it's okay, and we're now accepting things, and it's because we've gone through so many changes that now this progressive movement is starting to take effect.
Wow. You know, I'm concerned by, I mean, I think that that's terrific. It's called evolution, by the way.
Right.
But we have, John and I, have such a sense of what's at stake. Because we remember, I mean, fighting just for plain old civil rights. That's what the Equality Act is all about. We are still second-class citizens. But because of the assimilation, because of your ease walking through the world, you millennials, and I applaud you for it, I think it's great. But I'm not sure that you get what's at stake, because we had, if you remember, the California Supreme Court ruled that marriage equality was a fundamental constitutional right in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And then the people took away that right. And it wasn't until Prop 8 passed that everybody went, wait a second, what do you mean you took our rights away? So I'm wondering Duke, you and Jason think, do you have that same kind of sense of something at stake, some sort of sense of urgency, especially now when we're looking at the decay of our democracy?
Well, I think the Trump thing was basically, I think Trump did for millennials as a whole what Prop 8 did for the gay community, in the sense that I really think that, you know, people who I knew, you know, who were completely apolitical, you know, who, you know, millennials who, you know, I, you know, 2016, you know, I'd bring up politics and they were like, you know, I don't want to hear about that, or really, like, you know, I'm the guy at the party that starts talking about politics and everybody's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that right now. But people who, you know, used to be like that and used to not want to hear it, you know, are now, you know, mobilized and, you know, informed. And I mean, I've actually been shocked by the level of engagement that I've seen from some of my, you know, fellow millennials that, you know, used to be completely disinterested. I really think, you know, the people are woke in a way that they've never been before, you know, but I think Trump did that. I think Trump was the Prop 8, but, you know, but it was the equivalent of Prop 8, but for everybody, you know.
Duke, you have given me a reason, one reason, to be grateful for Donald Trump. So thank you for that.
Not me, but you gave me something new.
Sign off now. Duke, thank you for joining us. Next week on Sidebar with John Durand, we're going to have the incredible Dr. Michael Gottlieb, one of the founders of the HIV virus, here in live studio. Look forward to interviewing him about his life experience with the HIV virus. Have a great weekend. Thank you for tuning in to a very sick and coughing John Durand. Thank you, Karen Oakham, for hosting to get me through my coughing spells. Thank you, Jason. And we'll see you all next week on Sidebar with John Durand here on Channel Q.